Podcast.
Experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay. Just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's the ticketking.com.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another edition of the victory version of Pulse of the Pack. Pulse of the Pack brought to you by Ticket King, and we have a special offer. They have a special offer, actually. Go to theticketking.com, and you can get 10% off of Packers tickets by using the code PackersTalk at theticketking.com. That deal ends after the day of the Giants game. So, if you're interested in getting tickets to a Packers game and using that code for some extras, then that would be the way to do that. You get 10% off, just like I said, and just use the code PackersTalk. But there is the end of my salesman pitch. I have myself here. I'm Jacob Westendorf, your host, and joined with me as always is Jason Perrone. Jason, are you much more somber now that the Packers have won a football game and look good?
Somber. So I know that I have this reputation to uphold and an audience to cater to on game day, but enlighten me on how I would be somber after a victory.
Somber was what we'll refer to as a piss-poor word choice. Maybe I should have used the word relax. It's clear I have a terrible vocabulary.
Yes. I am definitely much more R-E-L-A-X-E-D. I actually have that T-shirt. Some of you might have it that says, Aaron says relax, that came out in 2014 after obviously he made that famous quote early in that season. And I wear it as often as I can because I live in the Twin Cities. Passive aggressive is a very, very Midwestern trait. And so I want to fit in. So I wear it as often as I can. But, no, very happy to be going into the bye week 2-1. Obviously had a few tense moments at the end of that game, as tends to be the case with these Packers. But a win is a win, Jacob, and I think you and I both agree at this point. We don't care about pretty anymore. Just win the damn game.
Yep, never have cared about pretty. I've always said I would rather win ugly than lose pretty, or barely win than just lose any day of the week. So the Packers did win. They are 2-1. Some news and notes from that game yesterday. First, we'll start with the injuries, two of them. Aaron Ripkowski leaves the game with a back injury, which I'm sure upsets our friends over at Titletown Sound Off. And the other injury is one a little more problematic because it's a guy that actually is a contributor. No offense to Aaron Ripkowski, but he's a contributor to the offense in a more special kind of way, or at least he could be. Jared Cook injured his ankle. He was on crutches and in a walking boot after the game. No update given on him today by Mike McCarthy. It's unlikely you'll get one with the Packers being on their bye. They won't do anything, or they won't be together again until Sunday. So you're not going to have a whole lot of information given on that, but nonetheless, that can't be a good sign, can it, Jason?
No. Cook had high expectations, and I do think the Packers were really going to start to work him into the offense. We saw Aaron Rodgers go to him early, and it was a nice pass. It's the type of thing we've been wanting to see from Rodgers to any receiver really this season, and we saw it. Devontae had another slant catch yesterday. The slant seems to be back, which is a very exciting thing for me as a throwback and a guy who, and you did too, you know, grew up and really loved watching Favre be so successful with that throw Yeah, the fact that he's in a walking boot and was on crutches after the game leads me to believe, I tweeted this out, I know I'm not a doctor, but it leads me to believe that we're probably looking at a 4 week at the very soonest, if not 6 to 8 weeks, and that would be if there's no major damage. But you got a walking boot and crutches, I'm not that encouraged. So on the worst case scenario, they put him on injured reserve and see if he's the guy they want to bring back if he's healthy enough. But you know, he was going to be a big weapon in the offense, and even though Richard Rodgers had a touchdown catch yesterday, we know he's just not the same thing as Jared Cook. So even though we don't really know exactly what Cook can be in this offense, I think it's safe to say already that it's definitely a loss.
Yeah, certainly a loss. And you saw yesterday, I mean, he made a nice catch on a slant. There was another play. He was running a deep crosser over the middle of the field. If Rodgers hits him in stride, it's another nice gash kind of play. And the Packers, you know, they're going to be missing a guy they brought in. And right now, you know, Jared Cook has missed already a decently significant amount of time, considering you don't know how long he's going to be gone now, but he missed most of off-season workouts and then some of training camp with a precautionary foot surgery. It's just unfortunate that the guy hasn't been able to be on the field for an extended period of time. The other bit of news, and I know for a fact that this made people pessimistic, it was announced on Saturday that the Packers were going to be missing Clay Matthews and Morgan Burnett, along with Sam Shields already. And then on Sunday, obviously, Dayton Jones and LaTroy Guyon were listed as doubtful. And then, you know, that almost always means they're ruled out. I don't even know why doubtful the designation, new or old injury report, but separate issue there. What that boils down to is there's five players that the Packers were missing, and most of them were starters. And then Dayton Jones is the only one in there that's not really a starter, but he plays quite a few snaps. So I got a text from one of my friends right after that, and, you know, this is kind of the state of what it was like, I guess, to be a Packers fan after losing to the Vikings last week. But he basically said, five starters out on defense and a bad offense, and I'm cleaning that up quite a bit. So it's 1-2 again, this time going into the bye. So before the game was even played, my friend had dismissed the thought that the Packers could win this game. Now, what I had said was the Lions were beat up as well, but Jason, I want to know, as someone who has the reputation, fair or not, as a little more on the negative side of things, what were your thoughts when you found out those guys weren't going to play?
Jacob, you worded that so well. You tread it lightly as well as anybody I know, and that's why I do this podcast with you every week. So, and yeah, you know, to be fair, yes, I am who I am, but I have an audience to cater to, like I said. And I think after 4 years of writing for the site and doing these podcasts, I think I've kind of figured out where I live in terms of my identity. And, might lose a couple followers here and there, but I think everybody pretty much gets it. I got to give a special shout out to Jacob Padilla, who usually tweets at me once a game about this, and he stuck around for many years. So, Jacob, thank you very much. You get me. And Jacob W., you get me as well. I love you guys. So I wasn't as worried about it because – and this is – I'm actually kind of serious when I say this. I mean, even back in the days before Brett Favre came to Green Bay, the Lions were not really known as a great team. And even though those 80s Packers were always average to below average, the Lions were the winnable game every season. So when the Packers didn't beat the Lions, even though it wasn't an expectation that they were going to win any particular game, it still was very irritating. So I think I've had it ingrained into my mind that the Packers should always beat the Lions regardless of the scenario. And yes, they didn't have those defensive guys. I know Matthew Stafford's had a pretty good season so far. He's been throwing the ball better. So, you know, maybe not as much pressure on the passer, and so that could become a problem, which we obviously saw become a huge problem that we're going to talk about later. 385 reasons why it was a major problem, but I still – no Calvin Johnson on the Lions side of things. Golden Tate's another year older and closer to retirement, which is exciting for anybody who's a Packers fan. So I wasn't discouraged. That didn't impact my outlook on the game at all. I think I was still more concerned about what we were going to see from the Packers offense than any of those missing defenders.
Well, there's that. And with, you know, my first thought when I saw that those guys were out was the offense better come to play then. And that's where we're going to start this game, because they did. The first possession of the game, they marched right down the field. Aaron Rodgers hits Devontae Adams for a touchdown, 7-0, and then all of a sudden it just took off from there. Aaron Rodgers, 4 touchdown passes in the first half, 2 to Jordy Nelson. He was in the pocket. He escaped when he had to, threw the ball down the field on extended plays when he had to, but it wasn't forced. It wasn't backyard football like they've been playing for the last however long. They had a lot of different personnel groupings. Devontae Adams only played 46% of the snaps, which is a big development from the first 2 weeks. Trevor Davis and Ty Montgomery played a little bit more. Not a lot, but I'm sure that they're going to work those guys in a little bit more as the season progresses. But it was nice to see, you know, different formations, different personnel. It was almost like the Packers offense of old. Still got some of the tempo stuff that they wanted to do. They ran the ball well. The running game was good. Eddie Lacy was awesome. You know, he had over 100 yards rushing. He averaged more than 5 yards a carry. But I want to, before I get to the running game, because there is a little bit to discuss there, I want to start with the passing game. You know, Jason, the final stats were not gaudy because Rodgers didn't throw for more than 200 yards. But at the same time, it's obvious that the offense was better on Sunday. And, you know, do you really, you know, I know that the running narrative now is that Rodgers hasn't thrown for 300 yards in quite some time. But, you know, when he played like he did yesterday, are you all that concerned about him throwing for 300 yards? I mean, this is a much better way for this offense to play, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't care about 300 yards. I mean, and I'm guilty of it just as much as anybody. I mean, you hear something enough times, it starts to become, you start to buy into it. It's kind of like if you tell a lie enough times, you start to believe it. You know, like this whole thing about Aaron Rodgers and his quarterback rating over 100, which is gone now, so we can shut up about that. I mean, really, who cares? I mean, how many times have quarterbacks won a game with a rated quarterback rating under 100? Like you said, you know, you'd rather win ugly than lose pretty. And, you know, that quarterback rating, I mean, sure, there's a correlation between a high quarterback rating and winning games, but it can be done otherwise. And so if you don't throw for 300 yards, then I hope your running back ran for over 100 yards, because when your running back, he being Eddie Lacy, gets over 100 yards, the Packers' record is pretty damn good. So that's the flip side to the whole 300 yards thing with Aaron Rodgers. And anymore, we're probably going to see some dips and dives during this season, but they come out of it with the same record we were kind of hoping for during the preseason show. I'm perfectly fine with that.
I am as well. What I'm not fine with is something within the running game. And, you know, Jason, I mentioned it in the offseason, James Starks. I was ready to move on. I thought it was time to find a different second running back, a second leg of this 1-2 punch, if you will. I thought that, you know, Starks is, you know, when running backs lose it, they lose it hard and they lose it fast. I know he just got hurt and it was a small sample size, but even Adrian Peterson was not off to a good start this season before he got hurt and is likely going to miss the rest of the season with that injury. I don't know that for a fact yet, but he's going to miss significant time with that injury. But he didn't look good until or before that injury happened. So, with that in mind, James Starks is not near the running back that Adrian Peterson is, and he never was. But he's an older player. This is his third contract, which is something Ted Thompson almost never does. I know it's short term, but James Starks is not off to a good start this season. And it's very clear to me that Eddie Lacy is the best running back on this roster. And putting Starks on the field really seems to be a little more than a waste of time. I just don't understand, and I know he didn't get a lot of snaps yesterday, but the insistence of keeping him on the field when Lacy's clearly fresh, he's clearly running hard, I don't like it. And that's really the best way I can put it. I know that they did some other stuff with Ty Montgomery yesterday as a runner, but I'm tired of watching the trade-off by series thing, which is what they were doing beforehand. And I'm not okay with that. If they're going to continue to do that, I think there's no reason for anyone other than Eddie Lacy to be the running back on the field. Jason, what say you?
Yeah, we talked about this earlier today, and so you know you kind of know how I feel. I'm pretty much with you there. Starks just isn't – I mean, he's not getting the carries. He's not getting used because he's not effective. And like you said, bringing Lacy off the field for Starks doesn't translate into anything so far this season other than, hey, let's try to trick the defense. We'll trick them into what? It's not fooling anybody, obviously, because he's not doing anything. I mean, he had a – you know, his biggest asset to the offense is in the pass-catching area. Now, they brought in C.J. Spiller last week. They didn't sign him. There's no one out in the free agent world, I took a look today, who's you know, worth looking at. And honestly, realistically, would the Packers look at replacing James Starks with 3 games into the season, because they just don't do that during the season anyway for players that have actually done less than James Starks has, if that's even possible. So I don't see any way that he's gone before the end of the season unless he gets hurt. I mean, they could add a third back. You know, they let Brandon Burks go. Crockett got hurt. So they've carried 3 backs and a fullback before. And if this injury, this back injury to the Ripper, is going to be any kind of long-term, then there could be another open spot there. So who knows? I mean, I don't know why Spiller didn't get signed. I don't know if he failed physical or just wasn't good. I mean, no one else has signed him, so maybe there's an issue we don't know about. But, you know, the offense needs the two of the 1-2 punch. They only have a one right now, which is Eddie Lacy. And like, you know, Jacob, you said he should be out there, should be out on the field. I mean, Lacy, as much as we want to see him be the 25 to 30 carries a game guy, he really can't. And even if he gets 25 carries in a game, they're probably going to have to scale it back the next week because he's just he's just not the type of guy that can do it every single week. Or at least I don't think he can anymore. I mean, maybe he could, and we're talking about just 3 seasons ago when he was a rookie. But that much has changed in this amount of time, and I just don't know if we can trust that every week in number 27. So, you know, the run game just needs a shot in the arm or in the leg, I guess I would say. So, I mean, I'm wondering if maybe the Packers need to be thinking about throwing some more screens in there. I mean, that's really more suited to Starks' style, and I think that he can make some things happen. He did it last year. I mean, at this point, I buy into Lane Taylor at left guard. He's no Josh Sitton, but I buy into Lane Taylor because I don't hate what I've seen from him. So, you know, I know T.J. Lang is good in the screen game. He's pretty athletic and can get out there and he can still do it. So maybe let's see what they can do in space and let's try to maybe help Starks out a little bit by playing to his strengths instead of just putting him out there for the sake of putting him out there.
Yeah, no argument here on that. I mean, as a screen player last year, Starks was lethal, and that was really the only freaking play that the offense could run last year that was worth a damn. But that's a separate issue. This year, it just hasn't been there for him yet, and maybe it will be after the bye week. I don't know. But like I said, at this point, I'm not asking for Lacy to be a 25 to 30 carry guy because I also tend to think that would be a waste of time because any offense that has Aaron Rodgers, Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, among others, shouldn't be running the ball 25 or 30 times a game unless they just built this colossal lead in the first half that is insurmountable, which we'll talk more about later. But otherwise, I'm done with the James Starks thing, and I was done with it after last year. I'm done with it now. He's not a pass catcher. That's why I wanted the Packers to get a pass-catching running back. That's why I wouldn't have been opposed to C.J. Spiller this part of the season. It just doesn't make any sense. You know, Starks' running style works out nicely, but it doesn't do enough, and he's not doing enough now to warrant ever being on the field. Now you're just really taking – a better guy off the field to put a worse guy on it. And that's really the main reason for it. Personnel-wise, I touched on it a little bit earlier. Trevor Davis played yesterday, and he had a terrible drop late in the second half. I know that. But he also drew a really nice pass interference flag, and that was drawn because he could run really fast and get behind the defense. Ty Montgomery played as well. What this all, in a sense, means to me is it looks like the Packers, at least for yesterday, were finally willing to move some guys around and maybe not give 80% of the snaps as their third receiver all to one guy. The only guys that didn't get any significant snaps at receiver, I use the term significant a little loosely, but Jeff Janis, he played 3 snaps at the end, but those were all kneel downs. And then you have Jared Aberderis, who didn't get a single snap, which is a little surprising. And I also have the obligatory mention of my favorite tight end, the beer truck delivery man, Justin Perillo, making a catch and running really awkwardly after it. So I say all that to say, Jason, what do you think of, you know, Devontae Adams, like I said, 46% of the snaps yesterday. That is significantly down, almost cut in half of the percentage that he has on the first 3 weeks. What do you make of all of this personnel differentiating from Mike McCarthy yesterday, both with the players that are on the field and also with the way they're used, formations, things of that nature?
I was a fan of it. I'd called for it. It's only going to offer the offense more wrinkles and things that they can add in there and add into change and make some changes scheme-wise. You throw Ty Montgomery in the backfield, and I've never been a big fan of Cobb or Montgomery back there. And I think, you know, I thought about this. You know, the one narrative is I don't want them back there because they're going to get hurt. Well, to me, it's really more about effectiveness. I mean, if you do an end around to Ty Montgomery and he takes it for 10 yards or 15 yards, I'm immediately going to be encouraged by that, and I'd be okay with seeing it again. Same thing with Randall Cobb. You get Randall Cobb back there, and, you know, he carries one up the middle, which is amazing to me that he's willing to run between the tackles, but he does, and he busts one off. Okay, great. Throw a little bubble screen to him off on the side out of a formation, and he gets a big game. Great. You know, all those things add some options for Mike McCarthy and for the offense. And Edgar Bennett, I guess, got to throw that in there because he's the offensive coordinator, and they have this weird game planning duties that everybody has during the week. So I'm a fan of it. I like what I saw from Trevor Davis. We know he's got the speed. Don't forget, Jacob, because, you know, I don't know if you did slip it in there. I didn't realize how far that ball traveled in the air. I think, what was it, 70 yards?
66, something like that. I mean, it was while he was rolling left. Aaron Rodgers is ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, we're going to talk about Rodgers, you know, I mean, well, and we talked about Rodgers being back and his return to form, at least for last week, or for yesterday, I should say, because we're recording this on Monday. And if that wasn't a sign that good things are to come from 12 again, I don't know what was. I mean, that throw was insane. And if Trevor Davis, you know, he did the best thing that he could next to catching it, which was get him the ball inside the five, and then they scored. So, you know, that was fine with me. He also is the punt returner now, which means that they trust him enough to put him out there. And so if he gets a chance to return one, which he did yesterday, but unfortunately he just couldn't get going and he got taken down before he could gain any considerable yards, we're going to see some of that speed on display. I mean, if there's an opportunity to turn one into a touchdown, I mean, Micah Hyde had, what, three or four during his short time as a punt returner. So if he can do it, Trevor Davis can certainly do it if he gets, you know, a little lower hang time, a little less hang time, and he's got a little bit of a head start that he can get up to him. So I didn't love the drop, but he's a rookie, so you got to give some time to develop there. I didn't love the fact that Randall Cobb only had one catch, and I don't know schematically how they were trying to get the ball down the field in the passing game. I don't know what kind of coverage he saw. I literally have only watched the feed that was on Fox. So I don't, you know, I've not watched any actual film or broke it down. But one catch on the day for a receiver like Randall Cobb, you know, to me, I don't know if Rodgers just missed him open a couple times, which tends to happen when you've got, you know, four or five wide, which was good to see five wide again. That's another thing I was happy to see. But he was definitely looking for Jordy because Jordy had several catches yesterday. I think he had six catches, seven targets, and the touchdown. So, you know, there's some good and some bad to be had, but I'm much more encouraged than not. Now, this is a bye week, so I'm going to expect to see the offense continue to do well coming out of a bye week, especially while they're still at home. They're not having to travel, and with the extra week off, I'm gonna want to see some things. So hopefully this is just the beginning of things to come and the beginning of things that we're talking about here as far as the offensive changes and personnel groupings.
I agree. I don't think there's a whole lot to add there. I think I mentioned it, you know, in the week before. There was no reason to keep seven receivers if you weren't going to use them. I'm excited about the element of speed that Trevor Davis can bring. I've already talked several times about how high I am on Ty Montgomery and the things he can do for this offense. You know, as for Randall Cobb, you know, you mentioned that one catch, 31 yards. Yeah, that's pedestrian. But, you know, the other thing is the Packers only completed 15 passes yesterday, and the most receptions by any receiver was two, other than Jordy Nelson, who had six, I should say. But some of that has to do with the way the second half went. The second half was really weird. The Packers had four possessions. They had a field goal. They had two punts, and then they ran out the clock there at the end of the half. So, you know, a lot of people on Twitter and social media, which really is just a vile place during Packers games, but separate issue. A lot of people are complaining that Mike McCarthy's going conservative, and, you know, realistically, you know, the first drive where they got the ball, they ran the ball down the Lions' throat, ended up kicking the field goal because of a holding penalty on Brian Bulaga. So there was that. The two punts, they had a bad throw by Aaron Rodgers to Randall Cobb on one play, and another one, they had a first and 10 play where the ball hits Trevor Davis right in the face mask and it hits the ground on a play that could have been a 15-yard completion, maybe more if Davis makes a guy miss. That happened on first down. Packers unable to move the sticks after that. So I don't know so much as they went conservative as they just, you know, quit executing. I think it's easy to, and it's really getting really annoying to me, just the complaints overall about play calling, because I think what I want to do is get these people in a room, and every and anybody that complains about play calling, I want to sit with them and say, here's the game, and I want you to call plays with Mike McCarthy, and I want you to tell me why you're calling these plays, and I want you to tell me why something didn't work and what else would have worked that was better. And I would love to do that, because I think it's really easy to blame the play caller when something doesn't go right. I really think it's lack of conservative play calling yesterday, more lack of execution. And that's how I feel about the way the second half went yesterday. Jason, what do you think about, you know, the idea that the Packers may have taken their foot off the gas?
I used to think that that's what they did, because we're all kind of, you know, reverting back to what we remember from 2011 when that was happening a lot. I think that's just the way that they approach playing with a lead. And I don't think that they took their foot off the gas. And if I said that in a moment, which I don't think that I did, even backhandedly in a tweet, then I was wrong. Because if you look at it, they're still rushing the passer. They're still trying to get to Stafford. There's just a lot of young guys in the secondary. It is what it is. You know, they gave up a ton of yards. They don't want to get gashed. No defender wants to be the defender who gives up a pass play or gives up a touchdown. You know, you had, unfortunately, Marvin Jones is a fast receiver, and Josh Hawkins stumbled for one half a step, and that was all it took. Down the sideline he goes, he scores. Had another defender fall. I don't know if it was Hawkins again or who it was, and Jones is by himself falling over in the end zone, and he just happens to catch the football. And so, you know, those aren't the kind of things the Packers try to give up. I don't think they intended, when they were up 31-3, to say, hey, it's cool, just don't let them get any closer than 7. So, no, I think it's just, and again, film study will have a lot of info for us later this week when some of the usuals come out, Eye in the Sky and Ben Fennell, to name a couple, that will come out and say, okay, here's what was happening. But, no, I don't think they took their foot off the gas. You know, the Packers' offense just sometimes it struggles. And it's really easy to say the play calling this and that. But, you know, I mean, it's real simple. I think Marv Levy said it. You know, I quoted it in my Game Balls and Lame Calls post on Cheesehead TV. You know, if the play you called didn't work, then you should have done the other thing. So I think we need to kind of get off of this whole play calling thing. You know, even the run at the goal line last week that was, you know, or was that against Jacksonville, that was supposed to be a run when they were pass blocking? I mean, those things happen. You have to remember, Mike McCarthy gives Aaron Rodgers the ability to make changes at the line of scrimmage. So, no, they weren't taking their foot off the gas. They just they didn't execute well, and Detroit really was determined to try to get back in that game once they saw a glimmer of hope. You know, just kind of all came together. And I hope I don't sound like I'm making excuses. That's really honestly my take after watching this team for years.
No. It's just funny to me how, you know, last year people that complain about play calling are so relieved that Mike McCarthy is giving up the play calling to Tom Clements. And then they can't wait for him to take the play calling back from Tom Clements as the season goes on. And now they want him to give it up again because clearly it's terrible. I think that these people just never will never be satisfied. So overall, though, 34 points, big win, you know, offense actually looks like what we're used to seeing. So I have to ask, Jason, how do you feel? Are you relaxed? And my answer to that question, I'll simply quote Aaron Rodgers from Jason Wilde yesterday. After his fourth touchdown pass, second to Jordy Nelson, he goes up and T.J. Lang said he ran up and headbutted him. He smiled in the face, smiled, looked right at him, said, "I'm back." So, hail to the king. Aaron Rodgers is back, and so is this offense. So I think. I told you guys last week, until I see it, I don't think the Packers have a good offense. Well, I also know when I said that, that it wouldn't take very much for me to believe that they actually do have a good offense because they have the best quarterback in the freaking game. That's all it took yesterday. Go Pack. The offense is back. Jason, do I need to calm down?
Absolutely not. Ride it. Ride it all the way through the bye week, and hopefully it takes us through the Giants game because you know how I feel about Eli Manning.
Yes. Yes, and I feel the same way. So that's who the Packers will face. We will break down the Giants later on. We actually have a special guest. I believe it's, what, the middle of next week? I don't remember the exact date, but we have a guest that will let you guys know who that is on Twitter throughout the week. I'll get you the exact date on that before this show ends as well. But that's when we'll break down the Giants, get us some good bye week material. It should be a good time for everyone that is a football junkie. But, you know, along with the offense, obviously the defense played yesterday as well. Let's go to that. My theory on yesterday's game was that it was always going to be a struggle on defense. Now, when the defense gave up a field goal on the first possession and didn't give up anything until just before the half, definitely a pleasant surprise. I really thought the pass rush was going to struggle without Matthews and Dayton Jones. And you could tell, you know, it's obvious pass rush is better with Clay Matthews on the field. And it's better with Dayton Jones rotating in and out as well. But they did also have some good moments. And Nick Expletive Perry had a big day rushing the passer. So he had two sacks. He has 3.5 on the season. And he's half a sack away from tying his career high. And we've only played 3 games. So I got to know, Jason, are we finally maybe seeing the guy that the Packers thought they drafted all those years ago? Because this guy looks like a completely different player. He's healthy, and he's been arguably, maybe other than Matthews and Mike Daniels, the Packers' best defensive player through the first 3 games of the season.
Yeah, we are. I kind of got on Perry yesterday because of the ridiculously dumb, unsportsmanlike penalty. The slash throat motion has been outlawed in the NFL longer than since Roger Goodell started taking all of the air out of the sails of the fun part of football. So that was really dumb. And that helped the Lions keep a drive alive that they may have possibly stopped. And they ended up getting points on that drive. And then Perry also missed a tackle in the backfield that he had where he was back there almost at the same time that the ball got to the running back. And so those two things did not set well with me, and I went on a bit of a tirade until cooler heads prevailed and reminded me that there's a total body of work to take into consideration. And after taking a look at it, you know, Perry had a great game, obviously. And, you know, and I came back around and gave him his accolades on Twitter. And after, you know, I go back and I'll watch it again. And he really did have a good game. If you look at it, you're focused on him. He had a really good game. I mentioned he was in the backfield at the same time that the ball was there. I mean, when he's free, and for some reason, teams just like to leave Nick Perry unblocked. I mean, we saw what happened in the Colts game. We've talked about it 1,000 times on this very show in Indianapolis in Andrew Luck's rookie year, what happens when Nick Perry is unblocked. It's not a good thing for the offense. That's for darn sure. And so it took 12, 13, 14, 15. It took four full seasons and part of a fifth, but we are now seeing Nick Perry's ceiling. Or maybe the ceiling isn't even reached. If it's not, then holy bananas, man. What we've been getting shorted over the past 4 years because he's healthy, he's available, he's making plays. We see him make plays in bunches in the past, but he's doing it on a consistent basis this year. So it's almost safe to say that, you know, because Clay Matthews is hard to compare anybody to because he's such a special player – But with him being out and having Nick Perry in there, and I know that they're on opposite sides of the line, but it's almost mitigated because, or to at least a better extent than it's ever been before, where Nick Perry, when you put him in the game before, he just kind of was there to fill a spot. Now he's actually mitigating the loss of some very big key players like Dayton Jones and Clay Matthews. You don't lose as much because you got 52 out there. So, or not 52, but 51. But now I'm 53. I knew he was the 50s. So, you know, he's really come into his own, and he is quickly moving up the list of guys that the Packers are probably going to have to consider getting done or that are going to put on their priority list to get re-signed because he's still young. And if he's going to play like that, he's somebody the Packers could definitely use. Their defensive scheme, it's not easy to find guys that are going to contribute like that, especially not straight out of college. So I was happy for Nick Perry, and I'll tease it a little bit because I know we're going to talk a little bit more about some things from this game. This isn't the last time you're going to hear me talking about Nick Perry.
No, it's not. We've got plenty more on that going. Other things that went through the game. Kyler Fackrell had a sack. He's looked far less overwhelmed than I thought he was going to be after the preseason. He's actually done some nice things, given the Packers some decent snaps. Now you can see some of the rookie in him for sure, but he's done a lot of good things for the team as well. So that's exciting to see. Maybe this kid can be a good situational pass rusher. If nothing else, more quality depth on the edge. But the story of this game really was notably what is becoming a big trend in this secondary is the dropped interceptions. Ladarius Gunter had one, hit him in the face in the end zone. I mean, a little bit of a twist and a turn, but nothing that an NFL player shouldn't be able to make on the play. The Micah Hyde had dropped an interception as well. And then Joe Thomas would have made a hell of a play down the middle of the field, and he dropped it as well. You know, the only interception the Packers had yesterday, they should have had three easy ones. And the only one that they had was Demaryius Randle taking the ball away from Eric Ebron. And that's a great play on the interception. But this is where I want to start, Jason. You know, this is supposed to be the strength of the team is the secondary. And the Packers defense has not looked the part as far as the secondary being the strength of their team. Now, they had some good moments against Jacksonville. And then Sam Shields hurt his head. And we don't know when he'll be back because it's a head injury and those things are unpredictable, especially in today's NFL. But, you know, Demaryius Randle, back-to-back weeks where he's been the primary cover man on a guy who has 200-plus receiving yards. That's embarrassing. Quentin Rollins, my guy, hasn't been that good. The Packers' best cornerback yesterday was an undrafted free agent. That was Ladarius Gunter, even with the dropped interception aside. So my question off of all of this, Jason, is how concerned are you about the secondary? I mean, that's, you know, Matt Stafford's good and he piles up yards. I get all that, and it's going to be a struggle. But the week before, it was Sam Bradford, who's nothing special. And, you know, Blake Bortles hasn't exactly ascended the way that many thought he was going to this year. Should we be worried?
I'm not sure. I don't know about worry because worry is you don't see an upside. And I do see the upside. Even with Shields, these young corners don't quite have it yet. And, you know, I mean, you hear guys talk about NFL players who have it. It's not a specific thing or list of things. It just means when they're on the field, they make plays, they get it done, you can count on them, they have it, you know they're going to do something. And Randle, Rollins, Gunter, Hawkins, those guys aren't in that category just yet. Even after the good things that we've seen Randle do, I wouldn't put him there yet. You know, you don't often see teams playing deep into January with the formula of how many young and inexperienced corners Green Bay has. You usually have some veterans that are manning those positions. So, you know, convenient example that I'll use last year is the Denver Broncos. Chris Harris Jr., Aqib Talib, not rookies, very experienced, very savvy veterans, Talib especially. And on the other side of the ball, you had Josh Norman back when he was with the Panthers. So I'm not saying corner is as vital as quarterback, but it's up there. and you got to have good corners. The back end, you know, I mean, you get your pass rush going. The Packers front seven is doing some damage this year. I mean, they're not giving up any rushing yards. They're stuffing the run, and they're getting to the quarterback. You know, they've got more negative plays to their credit than any other team so far after three games. And the next closest team is the Jets, and I think they're six or seven negative plays less than the Packers. So the back end's got to do its job. It's just not happening. I'm hesitant right now to say that the Packers have what they need at the cornerback position. You know, Randall needs to turn it on and become a pro, not just rely on his ability. I think, you know, if he could benefit from more film study or really take some coaching on his technique, he's got one of the best cornerback coaches in the league, and Joe Witt. You know, Dom Capers put him in positions to win his matchups. You know, I mean, Randall's the number two guy, so they have to stick with him for better or worse this year. You know, after last year, there's no reason why he can't be that guy, like I said. You know, I wouldn't put him there yet, but I think he's got that ability. But he needs to reach that plateau sooner than later because he's going to be the man this season. He has to be. If he's not going to, then we're all going to end up being disappointed. And as far as the safeties go, the only thing I can really say there is, you know, with the corner situation being what it is, if Rollins is going to grow slower than we thought and if Randall's going to have his ups and downs like this, then we're going to need Morgan Burnett and Ha Ha Clinton Dix to get healthy and stay healthy all year long. Otherwise, you know, like I said, it's going to be a bevy of problems back there at some point. It's probably going to come at the worst time possible.
I mean, I can't argue with that very much. I just, you know, Demarius Randall has to play better. I'm sure he knows that. My general thought on this, and I'm not going to panic yet. Like you said, I see an upside. If Sam Shields comes back and they're struggling with him, then I'll be a little more worried. But until that time, I'm going to relax a little bit at least. Now, to quote Aaron Rodgers once again, the strength of this defense, though, through 3 weeks, shockingly, has been the front seven, and specifically against the run. The Packers are the number one defense against the run. They give up on average 1.8 yards per carry through the first three games. Yesterday, the Lions had 23 carries for 50 yards, which is good for 2.2 yards per carry for you mathematicians. I'm stunned. This is a defensive line where I went through and I was like, okay, it's Mike Daniels, it's Troy Guyon, that's not so bad. You get Kenny Clark, the first-round pick. We'll see what he does. No Mike Pennell for four games. And then you got Dean Lowry. And really, who knows what else? Christian Ringo's in there. Brian Price made some plays yesterday. I mean, the Packers are getting production. Yesterday, they didn't have Guyon or Pennell in the game. And they were dominant on the line of scrimmage. One more game, they get Mike Pennell back. Mike McCarthy says he hopes that Troy Guyon will be back for the Giants game in a couple weeks. That remains to be seen how that'll go. But, I mean, without two of their best run defenders, the Packers dominated the line of scrimmage. And they've done that consistently for the first 3 weeks. And you're talking, the Lions don't really try to run the ball. T.J. Yeldon's an okay player. And you've got Adrian Peterson, obviously. That's the big one right there. But we've seen this before. And the year I go back to is in 2013, the year Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone. That Packers defense was ranked number one against the run halfway through the season, and they finished that year ranked 27th against the run. So that is a little worrisome to me just because I've seen this happen before. Overall, I'm excited about this. Kenny Clark has been awesome in his extended action. Mike Daniels is Mike Daniels. You guys know my feelings on Mike Daniels. Troy Guyon's been good when he was on the field. And you got the role players really doing some good things. The outside linebackers are playing well against the run. I can't gush about this enough because if this secondary starts reaching its upside and is as good as I think they can be, if the Packers get their pass rushers back and get after the quarterback, stopping the run will make them one-dimensional. And they can get after the quarterback, they'll get interceptions, and that is what will make this defense championship caliber. And that's something they haven't been in – I mean, maybe 6 years, you could argue maybe the 2014 defense was, but they haven't been a really good defense since 2010 when they brought that Lombardi Trophy home. So this could be the start of a year where maybe they have a championship defense if they start putting this stuff together. If they keep this together and put stuff together on the back end, big year coming for this Packers defense, I think. Jason, what are your thoughts on the Packers front seven, specifically against the run?
Well, before I get into that, I need one quick go back, and I want to mention this you about the secondary, because it was a big, in all in caps, point that I skimmed over. Those interception drops, awful. And you know, you mentioned it, and this goes back to the Arizona playoff game when Sam Shields dropped, I think, two of them. You know, I know these guys aren't receivers, but you got to catch the ball. I mean, you got to catch the ball, and good teams make those plays, so this is a good team. Why are they not making those plays? That's my rhetorical question. As far as the defensive line goes, man, it's easy to gush and be encouraged by it. Now, kudos to you, Jacob, for coming up with the comparison, or the, you know, the reminder of 2013 of what can happen, because, you know, 3 weeks into a season, it's still early, and a lot of things can change. I mean, right now, you know, how high is everybody on Carson Wentz in Philadelphia after the game he put up against the Steelers, who were previously unbeaten after their first two games, and how good they looked, and how many people have picked them to go to and maybe win the Super Bowl. So, you know, who knows what we're going to see from Wentz the rest of the way. You got Sam Bradford lighting things up in Minnesota. They're, you know, punching the Carolina Panthers in the mouth in Carolina. So how long is that going to go on for? It could go on all season or maybe not. We have to remind ourselves it's still early in the season, and we've seen this before. It's like you said, Jacob, there's a lot of things can change, so you almost have to kind of pace yourself. But right before we came on and started, Ben Fennell tweeted out a quick snippet, quick GIF video of one of the snaps yesterday of Kenny Clark and how well he got off the line, moved laterally into the running back on a running play and stuffed the run. What a huge, awesome thing to see. Because we've talked about he's a first-rounder, he's got to contribute, and he looks like he is so far. He's got Mike Daniels in his ear. You know, remember in training camp after the first practice, Mike Daniels got on Kenny Clark and was screaming at him, trying to instill that culture and the values of being tough and being the bad guy for once and all those things that Mike Daniels has talked about being. You know, I think it's all resonating. You get Guyon back, you get Pinnell back. You know, these guys, you know, Bill Huber on his podcast talked about how none of those guys besides Clark were even second or third rounders. They're all undrafted free agents or street free agents or, you know, fourth, fifth round and beyond. But you put them all together and the sum of all those parts equals domination. You know, and throw Dean Lowry in there too, because Lowry played a couple snaps as well. And I think with time, I think he'll also get better and hopefully kind of feed off of that. Christian Ringo, you know, he had a good game too. The whole defensive line rotation, I mean, with Dayton out and with Pinnell missing time and Guyon out, didn't miss a beat. And the Lions aren't world beaters on the offensive line. I mean, their offensive line is not great. You know, they've got the first-round pick, Decker, who, you know, he was okay. And, you know, and you've got Riley Reiff and some of those guys that have been around for a while. But, I mean, their offensive line isn't great, and their running backs aren't fantastic either. I mean, Amir Abdullah is on an injured reserve, so – I don't think the Lions were going to come in and set the world on fire, and they didn't have a chance to either. I mean, part of the reason why they didn't run the ball a ton is because they were behind from the moment, you know, from the opening kickoff. So that was another reason. But linebackers are playing well. We mentioned Nick Perry. You know, Nick Perry is a great player against the run. When Clay Matthews is healthy, he chases down the backside better than anybody that I've seen. So, I mean, this front seven is getting some things done, Jake, and that's why it was, I think, kind of difficult to see the secondary struggle, because, man, if they can come around and achieve their potential, or even, you know, Demaryius Randall takes half a step forward, Quentin Rolla takes half a step forward, and they can play Micah Hyde in spots versus having to play every snap. This defense, you know, we talked about it before. We talked about them being a top defense. It's not far-fetched, but it starts up front, and I have a lot of fun watching, you know, at the snap. I'm guilty of maybe not watching games as critical of an eye as some people do, but I love watching up front, and I just kind of watch that space in between the defensive line and the offensive line, and I like to see who moves the pile. And that defensive line for Green Bay, I mean, they're still fresh. Hopefully they're still doing it in Week 17, but they're getting a good push up front, and that's what it's all about, especially in that 3-4 that they like to run.
Yes, it is, and the first 3 weeks have been just phenomenal up front. I really don't have a better way to put it. Mike Daniels is an ass-kicking machine. He plays on the other side of the line of scrimmage as much as any defensive lineman in all of football, at least for this season, and Daniels has been great for years. You're getting contributions from the other guys, and, you know, Jason, I think you hit on it. Kenny Clark, you know, you didn't know how much to expect from the guy because he's a rookie. He's young. He's only 20. He's still not 21 years old yet. And you've got other guys just making contributions up front. It's been a very pleasant surprise. Now, like I said, I've seen this before. So I hope that it's something that continues because I've seen it before and I've seen them collapse before as well. So this is a different team. This is a different year. And hopefully that means a different result. So, Jason, that brings us to our ticket king of the game. And I've mentioned him several times throughout the broadcast. Nick, fill in the blank, Perry is my ticket king of the game. 2 sacks. He was incredible yesterday. I very easily could have gone with Aaron Rodgers. And definitely Aaron Rodgers looked like Aaron Rodgers yesterday. But I'm deciding to go with the guy on defense because ultimately, you know, the defense did help out the offense in putting up that big lead. Otherwise, it was just going score for score. So they helped him build the lead. Perry made some big plays late in the game. I think he's having a breakout season. Like I said, he's half a sack away from his fourth. He's half a sack away from his fourth of the season, which would be a career high, and we've only played 3 games. So that's incredible. Good against the run. Maybe stop slashing your throat after a run play. And that's ridiculous penalty, but also ridiculous that that is the penalty. But that's my opinion and also a separate discussion. But Nick Perry, that is my guy for ticket king of the game. Jason, who is yours?
F-A-T, the fat guy. And actually, after yesterday, it should be P-H-A-T. It's Eddie Lacy. Running back Eddie Lacy. I could have gone with Rodgers, too, and I say that jokingly, and there's a couple particular listeners and followers of mine who that's directed towards with a wink and my tongue firmly planted in my cheek. Could have gone with Aaron Rodgers as well. I would say the ticket king play of the game was him throwing a ball 66 yards in the air, although after the Hail Mary in Detroit last year, we know that was possible anyway, but rolling to your left, great throw, amazing, but going to go with Lacy. The Packers actually gave him the opportunities. They gave him the carries. He eclipsed the century mark. We know that good things happen when he hits that 100 yards, but for me, the reason why I go with Lacy is because of how he ran. He ran with a purpose. He was running guys over. He hit the hole hard. He wasn't dancing around. No east-west, north-south, running downhill. That's what Lacy does, or that's when he gets his production. That's what he does his best, when he's running up and down. And the offensive line obviously deserves some credit there for opening up some holes. But I think when Eddie Lacy wants to, even when it's not there, he can get his yards. Those vintage plays where the entire defense is hanging on Lacy and he's still dragging them and the whistle blows and he's still on his feet, that happened 2 or 3 times. That is the Eddie Lacy the Packers are going to need this season if they're going to do any kind of damage, especially late in the season. So going with Lacy is my ticket king of the game.
So Eddie Lacy for Jason, Nick Perry for me. And that brings us to the final segment of the show. And typically this is where we would break down next week's game. But we can't because there isn't a game next week. So, Jason, what I want to know here is kind of make it a little lighter here, I suppose, but a little less football-y here and a little more maybe on a personal side of things. What are your plans for the bye week? What are you going to – I mean, I know you and I both do it where we carve out specifically those 3 hours on Sunday when the Packers are playing, and those are the 3 hours that we have, and that is what we're doing. Well, now those 3 hours are free. You don't necessarily feel the obligation to watch NFL football on that Sunday. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. I don't know. But what are your plans for the bye week?
Well, I'm in the Twin Cities, and this week the Ryder Cup is taking place here at Hazeltine Golf Course. And, you know, many of you know that my day job has been in the hospitality industry, and so the entire city is pretty busy with stuff going on related to the Ryder Cup. And with the unfortunate news yesterday that we lost Arnold Palmer, there is a little bit of, it's kind of bittersweet around here with these players showing up, and hopefully that catapults the U.S. to a big win. But that's going to be going on through the weekend, and so there's going to be some work stuff going on. But I think this is a perfect opportunity for me, too, since this is my first fall as a return resident of the Midwest, get out to the pumpkin patch, the apple orchards, and take my little guy out there and let him run around, because that is one of the reasons why I wanted him to be here, grow up here, is for the changing seasons, fall being one of my favorites. So good opportunity to catch up and do that. catch a little bit of golf. Hopefully, again, like I said, the U.S. catches a big victory. And but you know, let's not kid ourselves, Jacob. We're still going to watch games. It's just nice to know for 1 week we don't have the stress and agony of a potential nail biter or even worse, the Packers loss. It's not going to happen, and that much we can count on.
Yeah, it's definitely nice knowing the Packers are guaranteed not to lose next week. Unfortunately, you know, it is the bye week, and that sucks. It also means they can't win next week, and that takes that 3 hours of joy away for me. My plans are a little different. Saturday, first of all, I'll be monitoring on my phone because I will be in Janesville, but I'm going to Janesville for what they call Sonic Boom, and what that is a big music festival, a lot of good rock bands, which is my cup of tea as far as music goes. I will be there. Disturbed is playing. Korn is playing. And then on Sunday is Breaking Benjamin and Avenged Sevenfold, which is – Avenged Sevenfold is really the main attraction for me on Sunday. But Saturday also, I'm sorry, listeners, but I will be rooting for the Maize and Blue team in Ann Arbor to end the undefeated season of the Wisconsin Badgers. They got Michigan State last week and they beat them down good, and I give them credit for that. But I must simply say, this is the real team in Michigan that they have to play this week, or at least I so hope that is true. But Michigan and Wisconsin will definitely have my attention on Saturday. It should be a great old school Big Ten slobber knock type matchup for those of you that like that kind of stuff. Should be a great game in the Big Ten, but sorry, guys, my heart's always resided with the Michigan Wolverines, and this week is no different. So that is what has my attention on Saturday. Saturday and Sunday, though, specifically, I'll be at a music show, so that should be fun. Good time for me. No wife, no kids, nothing like that, so I can kind of still not do whatever I want, but, you know, do whatever I want. So that should be a fun weekend for me. And with that, unless, Jason, you got anything else you want to add?
Well, we were going to, you know, we were going to talk about our surprise, I guess. And, you know, mine was going to be Nick Perry because of how well he played yesterday. But my actual surprise is that the middle of the field on defense is still wide open, this Packers defense. And I just... You know, Mike McCarthy said before the season started that you know, that's the case in today's NFL with the rules. The middle of the field is always open. Well, I say that's BS. I think Mike McCarthy and Dom Capers have to figure out a way to defend this area of the field that has been the Achilles heel of the Packers defense for ever since Capers has been in town. And I think they probably dealt with it some in 10, too, even when they won the championship, because they came on late and they got hot and they won the Super Bowl. So they had their struggles that season, too. You know, other teams are going to figure it out. And you know what is going to happen? Those teams that figure out how to defend the middle of the field, despite it being so difficult, are going to be playing longer than your team, Mike McCarthy and Dom Capers, if you don't. So no more excuses. Get it figured out. Jake Ryan and Blake Martinez are doing some great things in the middle. Use them. Get more creative. Gain some confidence. Joe Thomas almost had another interception yesterday. He can get around the ball, figure something out. With every, you know, with every additional playoff loss that the Packers experience, that's not a conference championship or obviously a Super Bowl, you know, the frustration grows both in the locker room and certainly with the fans. So I'm surprised this is still happening. And I implore the Packers coaching staff to use this bye week to figure out how to defend the GD middle of the field is basically all I have to say about that.
There you go. I knew we would end up talking about football before the show ended. So there you have it. I will leave you with that until next week's show. And we will be back. Just because the Packers are on a bye week doesn't mean we are too. It will not be on Sunday or a Monday. And I apologize. I lied to you. I could not find when the date is that we agreed on with our guests. So I'll have to look for that by other means. But we will let you know on Twitter who our new guest is going to be and what our next show is going to be. It really should be a lot of fun as to I don't want to say too much because I don't want to give it away. So it just trust me. It's going to be fun. That's probably the worst tease in the history of this show, but I can't help it. I'm really excited for it, but I don't want to tell you too much. So that'll end today's show. Check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. Follow the show on Twitter, at Packer Pulse. You can follow me personally. I'm at Jacob Westendorf. You can follow Jason. He's at Jason Perrone. I want to thank our sponsor, Ticket King. Like I mentioned at the top of the show, theticketking.com. Use the code PackersTalk, 10% off Packers tickets. And with the prices of some of these tickets, it really is a really good deal. I think that's something that you guys should look into. We want to thank them for sponsoring us. Like I say every week, it's right down the street from the stadium. Go in, grab your tickets, walk down the street a little bit farther, go in the stadium and cheer on the Pack. Thank you guys for listening in. Our ticket king of the game this week, I had Nick Perry. Jason had Fat Eddie Lacy. That's P-H-A-T Eddie Lacy this week. Thank you guys for listening. 2-1 Green Bay Packers, a week off before they get the New York Giants at home. So, hope to hear you all you guys there in a couple weeks. Take the week off. Enjoy it. If you watch football, that's great. If you got something else, let us know what you're doing on the bye week. Tweet at Packer Pulse. We'd love to hear from you guys as well. Thank you, listeners, because as I say every week, you know, without you guys, this show really is pointless. So we thank you guys for listening week in, week out. Let us know how you feel. We're getting more interaction, but there's never enough interaction. So we appreciate you guys every week. Thank you guys for listening to Pulse of the Pack.
Of the Packs Podcast.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.